නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So we were discussing Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, which is available in Anguttara Nikaya, in the fourth Nipata, and there Buddha explained about four types of concentrations. First two are very much belonging to the Samatha meditation, and the second two are fairly representing the Vipassana meditation. In the first two, Buddha mentioned about a type of concentration which is helping to lead a very blissful life or happy life in this very life, and Buddha explained that is very those are the jhanas, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So what one can acquire through Samatha meditation, and those jhanas are the ones Buddha explained in this first category. In the second category, Buddha explained that if a particular type of samadhi is developed, one can have clairvoyance, Dibbacakku, and using which one can penetrate walls and all these hindrances, the different objects, and he can penetrate and he can visualize whatever things available. He can see whatever things available, and not only that, one can even recognize how a person being reborn based on his past karma. And Dibbacakku and Chutupapatthijñāna, these two are going together, and that is what meant in the second type of samadhi. There Buddha mentioned one is developing that abhinya, kind of a direct knowledge, based on samadhi, based on jhanas. So typically, as we discussed last time, it is based on the jhana, particularly the fourth jhana. When one attains fourth jhana, he has to master fourth jhana, and he has to have all eight jhanas. Actually, when one attains fourth jhana, it's a further elaboration of fourth jhana into another four, coming as Arupa Jhana. And if one masters eight jhana, then probably one can try for this abhinya, like knowing one's past lives and recognizing how beings are reborn based on their past karma, and hearing something that typically beings can't hear, seeing certain things which typically one can't see. So likewise, these things are discussed, but it is in the Samatha side. And one danger is also we discussed. Basically, even though these concentration states are available, if one doesn't handle them properly, it can lead to kind of a downfall. There are certain situations that even though first certain persons have fourth jhana, so they thinking that it is now they are accomplished, thinking that they are fairly fulfilled, and then they started feeling conceited, and ultimately even disrobed. So such incident has reported in the Hattisariputta Sutta, where one monk basically has mastered and then was in the fourth jhana, and he probably have had various psychic powers, don't know. Anyway, one Arahant actually has hinted that if one has too much conceit over these different kinds of concentrated levels, jhana, so that can lead to a kind of a downfall, because he don't know how to handle the jhana, and he can be fairly proud about it, and he don't know how to handle it, and he therefore is mixing up with various people without sort of protecting himself, safeguarding himself, basically neglecting his monkhood. As a result of that, in the Hattisariputta Sutta, it is reported that particular monk actually had to disrobe. And certain other incidents are reported in the commentary, and certain monks with psychic powers, they were going through the sky, and while they are traveling, they hear voices coming from women, and ultimately, because of lust aroused in their mind, they didn't know how to handle it, and then ultimately they simply lost their those powers and ultimately came down. So likewise, many incidents are reported how these concentrated states can be a kind of attachment and also can be a cause of downfall. There is another interesting sutta called Sappurisa Sutta. There again and again Buddha highlights, even though one has all these different kinds of attainments, one should not feel conceited. So if one has first jhana, he should not feel that I am having first jhana, the others don't have first jhana, I am the accomplished one, I am the sort of fortunate one. So likewise, if one thinks too much about oneself, looking down the others, Buddha mentioned, then it's a cause of downfall and it is actually an asappurisa, a bad person, a wrong person. And therefore, in certain other suttas, like in the Sallekha Sutta, further Buddha mentioned, even though these jhanas are considered as sort of blissful life or pleasant, happy life, producing such kind of life, but it doesn't contribute to any kind of fading away of defilements. So if one has to uproot defilements, then definitely one has to move towards vipassana. Just by being in the jhana, it does not guarantee any reduction of defilements. Due to some reason, if you can't practice samatha jhana for a considerable period of time, then again you can completely lose all those concentrated states. As a result of that, again the hindrances and various other defilements can arise in one's mind. On the other hand, while one has jhana, one's mind is fairly concentrated, capable of enhancing whatever one's experience. So if even lustful thought arise, if even thought of ill will arise in one's mind, probably if one doesn't handle it properly, then it can lead to a really overwhelming level. So that could be another disaster. So if one doesn't handle those defilements properly, then more than a typical person who doesn't have jhana, this particular person might feel it immensely. So that also be a kind of drawback in the jhana. Now we can move on to the third one, that is another type of concentration that Buddha mentioned, which is leading to mindfulness and clear comprehension. So that is the beginning of vipassana, we can say. Say one is recognizing various bodily phenomena, maybe various feelings. So more and more one recognizes them, one is developing this clear comprehension. Say for example, at the beginning one recognizes pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings, and later one can recognize them so clearly. At the beginning might not be so clear, but with time, with his own practice, so those different feelings start appearing very clearly. So that means the improvement of the clear comprehension. At the beginning we probably only had some amount of mindfulness, so we started recognizing them, but later with our practice, so this clear comprehension improves, so that now one can recognize each and every pleasurable feeling, painful feeling, equanimous feeling very clearly. And even after that, say if you are continuing your practice, so more details are also visible. At the beginning you perceive like it's as a single pleasurable feeling, single painful feeling, single equanimous feeling, but with the development of clear comprehension one may understand, so it's a collection of small feelings, minute feelings, and each and every minute feeling has their own very short lifespan. They are quite instantaneous and they are momentary, they come and go, they arise and pass away. So likewise, depending on one's development of clear comprehension, one start recognizing this inside knowledge, what we call as the impermanence. Through one's clear observation, one may be able to understand the impermanence. So that is what basically highlighted in Satipatthana Sutta as the Satipatthana Bhavana. සමුදේ ධම්මානු පස්සේවා කායස්මින් හෙරති වය ධම්මානු පස්සේවා කායස්මින් හෙරති. One may recognize arising of different phenomena, one may recognize passing away of different phenomena. Here also in this section Buddha mentioned, here bhikkhu knows feeling as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. He knows perceptions as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. He knows thoughts as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. So each and every different type of phenomena, now one can clearly recognize how they are arising, how they are instantly passing away. Now actually this is also not a small thing. It has the capacity to even make someone a sotapanna. Because last time we discussed with respect to Kanda Sutta available in Saṅyutta Nikāya. So if one is able to clearly recognize these arising and passing away, it can even lead him to a stream winner. And therefore, the understanding, the knowledge about impermanence is one of the very important aspect of the vipassana. And it can lead to the understanding of unsatisfactoriness, dukkha. And then it can further leads to the understanding of anatta, non-self. So, more one understand these three characteristics, that means one is maturing in the vipassana. And now today we can discuss about the fourth category, where the complete, fading away of taints are described. So now Buddha mentioned there is a development of concentration that leads to the destruction of taints. Now in the previous one, it is very much like one started it. But in the fourth category, one is expanding it to all the different kinds of aggregates. The first one, maybe one is more concentrated on a particular type of aggregate which is more prominent and it is convenient for oneself. But in the fourth category, now one is expanding to all the five aggregates. So whatever different phenomena arise, belonging to any kind of aggregate, now one is capable of understanding their arising and passing away. So he basically has the understanding about what is form aggregate, what is feeling aggregate, what is perception aggregate, and then what is formations aggregate, and what is consciousness aggregate. As we discussed, I think in a different sutta, in the Upaya Sutta, so five aggregates are mentioned, and we discuss even in the Kajjaniya Sutta what are the different definitions given by the Buddha for each aggregate. So we discuss them in length. And if you are dealing with Kayanupassana, that is where you are doing a fair practice with respect to form aggregate. If you are dealing with Vedanupassana, that is where you are dealing with the feelings aggregate. If you are dealing with Chittanupassana, so we can say you are dealing with particularly the consciousness aggregate and again the formations aggregate. When you are dealing with Dhammanupassana, basically all five aggregates are again and again revisited, further and further enhanced, further and your knowledge is enhanced. So Dhammanupassana basically touches all five aggregates. Now therefore, Satipatthana in that sense helps to have a comprehensive understanding about these aggregates. And when one is basically understanding, recognizing, having one's direct knowledge, it starts allowing to fade away all the defilements. Now, first of all, having some amount of understanding is necessary for each and every aggregate. And recognizing them. Say for example, now when we consider as form aggregate. So it is not really that we are thinking that okay, I have born about say 40-50 years ago, now I am somewhat old, and then after 10 years, another 20 years, I will pass away. So that is very conventional. So that amount of understanding is not enough. So form aggregate require, understanding of form aggregate require more deeper and more subtle kind of understanding. So that is why we are involving in Dhatu Manasikara, the elements meditation, where your concentration is fairly focused onto various elementary characteristics available in the body. So now you are understanding those characteristics. Now those are the most primordial constructs based on which the body being sort of constructed. And when you are going and understanding all these very elementary level characteristics, so that is common to not only to this body, even to the whole physical world. So it's very much like we are taking a kind of a cross section to do our investigation, and that knowledge is fairly universal. And then actually now we can get on to another section that is called Vipassana Jhana. Someone actually has asked this question another time. So what is Vipassana Jhana? So we know about four jhanas available in the Samatha meditation. Similarly, we can recognize Vipassana Jhana, particularly Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw, Venerable Sayadaw U Pandita. So these venerables, those teachers actually recognize these different categorizations with respect to Vipassana meditation. Now in the first jhana, actually probably you can remember five jhana factors are available. Those are the vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. Vitakka is the applied mind, vichara is the sustained mind or sustained attention, piti is the rapture, sukha, that means happiness, ekaggata, say concentration or one-pointedness. Now if one is experiencing these five jhana factors in a particular concentrated state, one can say I was in the first jhana, I am experiencing first jhana. Actually we discussed different levels of depth about them and different methods that one can attain to first jhana, so these things we already discussed. Anyway, since five jhana factors are available, we are telling it is the first jhana. Now if we consider vipassana, now one can argue when one is able to clearly see various phenomena. Say for example, you are practicing Vedananupassana. Whenever a new pleasurable feeling arises, you are applying your mind to that pleasurable feeling. So that the applied thought is there. That means, suppose again and again, whenever a new pleasant feeling, pleasurable feeling, or even equanimous feeling, painful feeling are arising, again and again you are able to apply your mind. So application of the mind is available. So vitakka is available. And not only that, once you applied your mind to that particular feeling, now you start investigating it. Very much like you are observing it carefully, examining it. So the vichara is also there. And when you are successful in this, now mind is capable of doing it by itself. You don't need to push it to do it. Now the mind is fairly trained. Now automatically mind is continuing that task. Different types of feelings are arising, again and again mind being applied to that, you are investigating that, and you simply have to continue that process. Now it become a kind of a pleasant abiding, and as a result of that, this rupture, sukha, the happiness, all these are also available, because you don't need to strive to do it. Now at the beginning it is true that you have to strive, you have to struggle a little bit, you need to train the mind. But once the mind is trained, now mind may continue it. You don't need to really sort of have a struggle. So at that level, we can say you are in the first Vipassana Jhana, which also has five jhana factors. Ekaggata is where elementary kind of a concentration. Now, if you consider Samatha meditation, so there typically we get a single object, and we are trying to sustain our attention to that single object for a long time. But here the difference is, this concentration available in the Vipassana is a momentary concentration. Sometimes we call it as Khanika Samadhi. Or different phenomena are arising, again and again you are applying your mind to that, concentration to that, and momentarily mind get concentrated. New phenomena arise, mind get concentrated in that phenomena. Another phenomena arise, your mind get concentrated on that phenomena. Another phenomena arise, mind get concentrated on that phenomena. So likewise, again and again, your mind get momentarily concentrated onto new and new phenomena. So the concentration is a khanika samadhi, momentary concentration. Now the concentration is anyway very powerful. It is not simply a kind of a vague type of concentration. It's a fairly powerful concentration. And if you refer Dhammapada, so Buddha mentioned one Dhammapada verse, Amanusi Rati Hoti Pasato Udayabhyam. There's a kind of an inhuman type of pleasant abiding, pleasant feeling, rapture arising when one is seeing this arising and passing away. So actually in the vipassana, so this complete full realization of udayabhaya, arising and passing away, is attributed to the second jhana, because that is where the rupture and sukha, say pleasure, is more predominant. But the early stage of udayabhaya, that means where you are capable of applying your mind purposely to unphenomena and then seeing it properly or investigating it properly, then a little bit of rapture is available, little bit of sukha, happiness is available, and momentary mind is concentrated. So this is considered as first jhana. And when you are fully capable of doing it to its full level, that is considered as a second jhana. And further, I mean, now assume, say you are able to see minute details, as we discussed, say in the what you call balavudhyabhya, the more kind of powerful arising and passing away knowledge. So there it is not that you are seeing a particular sensation arising and staying for available for several, say 1 minute or 2 minutes, and then passing away. But rather you are capable of clearly comprehension, very minute details of that sensation. Now it is a accumulation of many small feelings, small sensations. Each and every subtle minute sensation now you can see. It's a very powerful type of understanding. So there, actually you don't need to again and again apply your mind. So first you apply, now when through the investigation you are able to see each and every minute details, those minute details are quickly arising and passing away. You are simply observing that situation, observing that phenomena. So again and again application is not necessary. Now mind is there, observing that, and as a result of that, rupture is also not there, applied thought is also not there, sustained thought is also not there. Simply what you have is a kind of a little pleasant investigation is happening. So therefore it is considered as a third jhana. When it comes to fourth jhana, it is very much like you are capable of maintaining your mind free from any phenomena, free from any attachment, any grasping. So it's very much unassociated mind. So you know, in Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha again and again emphasized Anisthitocha viharate nachakinchi loki upadhi. So you are living, your mind is capable of being in freedom without attaching to anything, without holding on to anything, without grasping anything, without associating anything. Now this state is completely equanimous. It doesn't have any rupture, it doesn't have kind of a pleasure. It's very much like equanimous. So various phenomena are happening, but you are not even want to explore them, because you are now dwelling in emptiness, not holding on to anything. So in this emptiness, non-grasping state of mind, so what one feels is more into equanimity. And the mind is concentrated, it is not concentrated on a particular phenomena. That is another very interesting situation here. So far we discussed kind of a concentration based on phenomena. Now, as we move forward in vipassana, and even without any phenomena, mind is fairly concentrated, very much like we can say mind has become stilled. There is no movement in the mind. Mind has fairly stilled. So this stilled kind of concentration, this we can't even say as concentration. We can say it's a kind of a collectedness of the mind. Say mind is collected, your mind is not getting distracted. The reasons for distraction being faded away, removed, and mind is in equanimity, It is maintaining its stillness, it is calm, peaceful. There is no distraction, there is no jumping, simply staying quiet. So this is quite equanimous. So this is, we can say, as the fairly parallel with the fourth jhana. The difference is fourth jhana in samatha is that you still have kind of a phenomena on which the mind being stilled. But here in the vipassana, there is no phenomena at all in the fourth level, and mind is still has that pervaded collectedness. There is no distractions, mind remains still. So therefore, these are fairly described in the Mahasi tradition as different vipassana knowledges or vipassana jhana, and all these actually we can consider as another level of developing samadhi. Now, there's an interesting passage I like to share with you. It's a kind of a statement made by Venerable Anadyo. The original idea of right concentration would have been cultivation of unification of the mind in conjunction with the other path factors. Now, when we come to Samma Samadhi, actually Samma Samadhi is defined in many different ways. Now, if you consider the long discourses of Buddha in the Digha Nikaya, there's a Satipatthana Sutta there. So, Samma Samadhi is explained as the four jhanas. But if you refer Mahachattalesaka Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, so there Buddha mentioned, it's a kind of a balancing of all path factors, then you are in the Samma Samadhi. You know, there are eight path factors. All the seven path factors have to come very much well balanced, in line. Then you are in the Samma Samadhi. So Venerable Anadyo argues, now that is the most say suitable kind of explanation or definition we can say as the Samma Samadhi. Because it's then the mind is fairly peaceful, in a kind of an equilibrium. And you can attain that even not only in Samatha Samadhi, in the Vipassana as well. So particularly when we are talking the Vipassana, that is where we come across all these path factors. And there we can say, when these path factors become in line, well in equilibrium, kind of an equipoise, then you are in the Samma Samadhi. So this is a kind of an argument which is quite valid, and it's based on the Mahachattalesaka Sutta, and that is what Venerable Anadyo has to say about it. And by the way, with time, so he argues, actually certain schools of thought, so they have added too much or too high concentrations into the picture, and then they start recognizing that as the Samma Samadhi. So previous situations, actually Buddha highlighted the development of all these path factors as a kind of a group. You can't really divide, say, Sila Samadhi Panya. Actually you can divide, but they have kind of interrelationships. It is not that you are individually developing Sila. It is not individually developing Samadhi. Individually developing Panya, rather there are interrelationships between Sila Samadhi Panya. So it's a kind of a accumulated effect. Then only they become kind of a well-balanced mind, a peaceful mind, where Sila is also available, morality is also available, concentration is available, you are able to see things clearly. And again, the wisdom is now developing. So all three training parts are there. Then one can say you are in the proper equilibrium. Now, I'd like to add another part to this section. So there is another sutta available in Khanda Samyutta. There again Buddha mentioned how it is also called Samadhi Bhavana Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned how samadhi leads to proper understanding. Samahito bhikkhave yathabhutam pajanati. So when one has a concentrated mind, then only he can see the things as they truly are. So having concentrated mind, becomes a kind of a prerequisite. Now, what is the reality now we are targeting? Seeing things as they truly are, what does that mean? So there Buddha mentioned, so you are seeing how form is arising and how form is passing away. How feelings are arising and feelings are passing away. Perceptions are arising and perceptions are passing away. Formations are arising and formations are passing away. Consciousness is arising and passing away. Now this arising and passing away is not really instantaneous type of arising and passing away. It is very much like you are contributing towards suffering. Arising part means you are contributing towards suffering. Basically you are grasping. You are grasping a particular aggregate, so that is Buddha mentioned as samudaya. Say for example, different, assume that while you are on your path, while you are traveling, suppose there is a beautiful sight. Now immediately your mind gets attracted to that. You start looking various signs, small things, and now mind is involved there, mind is enjoying that, and mind basically has some kind of a delight with that sight. As a result of that, now it is getting grasped, now mind getting grasped there, and it is holding that. Now you are born to that, upadana paccaya bhava. So once you are there, you have prepared your mind, you have become that. So that means, again, the arising of dukkha. Now you lost your peacefulness of the mind. You assume that you had a very peaceful, unbound, released, relaxed, detached type of mind you had. But now, with the attraction of towards the new this sight, now again mind get grasped, again it is being hindered there, again it is shackled there. Now it is fairly upadana, grasping. Now you are born to that. You are there now. You are born to a new state. After a while, now everything collapses, everything fades away. Now again the suffering arises. Now this is the arising of suffering. Now it can happen even onto the feelings. Suppose there is a pleasurable feeling and you slowly start getting attracted to that. Now you start grasping that. And ultimately you are there. You being overwhelmed by that pleasurable feeling. Suppose you received a fairly delicious food. One bite, very tasty, another bite, very tasty. Slowly you are partaking your food and ultimately you being carried away by that very pleasurable, pleasant experience and you lost your mindfulness. You are completely reborn onto a new world. So that is where the dukkha being arising, and this is the arising side Buddha explained. It can happen even to feelings, it can happen to perceptions, it can happen to various mind states, that means formations. And it can happen because of eyes, ears, nose, like that, all the six faculties. Now, here is the arising part. And then Buddha explained the passing away side. So that is the opposite, actually. You are not getting attracted to any particular thing. Say you saw some kind of a thing or you heard a beautiful sound. But you are able to maintain the clarity of mind. You are able to maintain your unattached state of mind, able to maintain the peaceful state of mind, not getting attracted to that. As a result of that, there is no huge delight in the mind. You are simply maintaining your equanimity, not being carried away by that present sight. As a result of that, there is no grasping. Since there is no grasping, there is no becoming. Since there is no becoming, there is no accumulation of or production of suffering. So likewise, Buddha mentioned to feelings, perceptions, and formations and consciousness. So when you are not grasping, there is no suffering. Now this is the fading away part. So if one is capable of recognizing both these sides, Buddha mentioned this is the seeing things as they truly are. So in order to do that, you require a certain amount of concentration, clarity of mind, and that is what called as the samadhi bhavana. So it is very much into vipassana. So actually what we discussed right now, is fairly in line with the explanation given in this Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, where you are recognizing each and every aggregate and arising it and then passing away of it. So more into Vipassana part, and all require certain amount of Samadhi, and you are using that Samadhi to fade away various defilements, fade away taints. And at the end of this sutta, Buddha makes a little reference to another statement available in Parayanavagga, the questions of Punnaka. And it was with reference to this that I said in the Parayana, in the questions of Punnaka. Now Buddha refer a particular statement made to Punnaka. Having comprehended the world's highs and lows, he is not perturbed by anything in the world. Peaceful, fumeless, untroubled, wishless he has, I say, crossed over birth and old age. Now this is complete accomplishment of fading away of taints, basically about a statement on Arahant. So he fully comprehended the world's highs and lows. That means the vicissitudes of the life he understood. Now he is not being carried away by those highs and lows, ups and downs. He is capable of maintaining the peacefulness of the mind. He is a thadi person. He is an undisturbed, unperturbed kind of a person. He is not perturbed by anything in the world. Different things may happen. Things may happen in the favorable side. He is not perturbed. Things may happen in an unfavorable type. This person is not disturbed, perturbed. He's maintaining a equanimous mind, peaceful mind. Peaceful, fumeless, untroubled, wishless he has, I say, crossed over birth and old age. So basically a statement referred to the Arahant. And so that is the end of this sutta. Basically we covered four types of samadhi. First two are fairly related to the samatha meditation, and the last two are related to Vipassana meditation. And I think probably you might have questions, and now I'd like to open the session for questions. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante, Sadhu,
That's
so if anyone has any questions, feel free to raise your hand, or you can also ask them via the chat.
Yes,
Yeah, so there is a question coming from our side. Yeah.
So Bhante mentioned a very interesting point. When Lord Buddha was talking about seeing the rising and passing away of the khandhas, he was also talking about really the grasping and non-grasping of the khandhas.
Exactly.
And so that seems like a very good way to investigate. But how does one do that practically? Because to see the grasping and then to see the non-grasping, it seems like one would still have to investigate prior to that to reach that sort of knowledge.
So probably, actually, I feel now when you call samudaya dhamma anupassi, vaya dhamma anupassi, that is very much like you are trying to understand their impermanent nature. So when one understands their impermanent nature, now you are capable of, assume that you are capable of at least maintaining your mind without any attachment, without any grasping. Suppose now you are being there. Now you are in a very relaxed concentration. It is not that you are, now in the previous state, you are very focused. Say you are keeping very precise attention to each and every phenomena. You are recognizing there are very minute details arising and passing away. Now that is actually development of Udayavaya, and you are with that you are able to taking your mind to an ungrasping state. Now you are in a very relaxed state. Now, because of our past habit, now mind get carried away to a sight that we have seen. So now the possibility is there, you again get attracted to that, again you feel happy about it, you've been delighted with that, and now again got grasping that, and again reborn to that. Now this is a very relaxed observation you are doing to your mind.
And so that
so,
one can
so see that see how the grasping is operating unknowingly because of our habitual tendencies. Again and again mind get attracted to a certain phenomena, again you get grasped that, again reborn to that, you're in a different world.
Yeah.
Kind of a bhava state, what you call a becoming state, new state. Now, so that is more into the second type of sutta that we call Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, available in Kanda Sangyutta, where Buddha mentioned Samahito Bhikkhave Yathabhutam Pajanati. What is this? He explained, Idha Bhikkhave Bhikkhu Abhinandati Abhivadati Ajjo Sayatittati. So Abhinandati, so you are sort of getting delighted with your experience, and Abhivadati, you are talking about it. You welcome that experience, and then you adjosaya titta, you being simply adhere to that.
Mm-hmm.
You are there, basically. You are reborn there. So that is little gross in that sense.
Yeah.
But more relaxed observation helps you to understand this operation in the mind, and ultimately you are minimizing that. You are not allowing that to happen. You are trying to maintain the equanimity of the mind, unattached state of the mind, and basically that is the opposite side. So you are maintaining the peacefulness of the mind, unattached state of the mind, ungrasping state of the mind. Even though you see a beautiful sight,
mm-hmm.
you are not being carried away by that.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you are simply maintaining that state. So Daya Buddha mentioned, nabhinandati nabhivadati najyosaya tithati. You are not delighted by it.
Mm-hmm.
You are not being carried away by that. You are not reborn to that.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise, if you are doing it, then Buddha mentioned Upadana Nirodho, Bhava Nirodha, likewise the opposite going to happen. So that is where the Athangava, the fading away part. So ultimately what happens is that grasping part disappears, stops.
Mm-hmm.
Stops means, I mean, now you are doing less and less graspings.
Mm-hmm.
Aggregates are operating, form aggregate and feelings, different things are there, but mind remains calm, mind its own business without grasping.
And so to even reach that state of seeing how the grasping arises, one already has to come from a pretty solid state of mind before that, which I suppose is why he says to develop samadhi for the sake of understanding, or even to develop vipassana jhanas, to have that sort of ungrasping state of mind, so that one can actually see the grasping arise.
Yeah.
Because otherwise if we're always already grasping. To see.
That's the thing. That's what my personal opinion also. Now, when we are completely overwhelmed by grasping, then we can't really see it.
Yeah.
So, in order to see that, you need some amount of concentration, and using that concentration, you are developing certain insights. That those insights help you to at least experience a non-grasping state of mind for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, you are familiarized with that, and with respect to that, with reference to that, now you know how mind is grasping. So now it is not, you don't need a very precise, deep concentration to see that, because you are capable of maintaining your mind in a non-grasping state.
Mm-hmm.
And while being there, you can see how mind gets shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again, you are losing that equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
Again, jumping to something that you are seeing, what you have heard. So likewise, all these things are visible to see when mind has that clarity. It is not simply that you are focusing onto a single phenomena and seeing it. Rather, mind has that clarity to see all these happenings in the mind. Yeah.
That's interesting. And also, another thing that Bhante mentioned before, which reminded me of something, like a concept that I hadn't practiced, but I heard from Venerable Ananda, was also this... These sort of jhanas and samadhi that after one has trained a bit with like the regular ways, one can learn to do without an object.
Exactly.
And so it's like much more of a empty sort of samadhi, but still all the jhana factors are there.
Yeah, so that's what I explained as the fourth jhana in vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, you are in a non-grasping state, but no object.
Mm-hmm.
Mind is fairly empty.
Mm-hmm.
So you are dwelling in emptiness. There is no object, but mind has the clarity.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely spacious.
Yes.
Mind is spacious. And
also
I mean,
not distracted.
Not distracted.
Yeah.
Not distracted. No. I mean, in order to distract you, when we consider the distraction, so you are distracting to various objects.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping to various objects and you are grasping, temporarily you are grasping one object, another object, another object, another object. So this is the distraction.
Yes.
But the point that we discussing in the fourth level, that is where mind is not distracted to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mind is very much like has its awareness.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Very relaxed awareness is available. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
The things are happening, but mind is not interested.
Mm-hmm.
It likes to stay quiet, still. So that is what basically the Vipassana kind of a contribution,
mm-hmm.
result happening at the... I mean, we can say that is what Buddha mentioned. Anisitocha viharati, nachakinchi loki upadhi. Again and again he highlights, so you are dwelling without associating anything.
Mm-hmm.
So mind has its own freedom.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's both the samatha and vipassana there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, we can say it's also somewhat... Certain samatha qualities are also there,
mm-hmm.
because it's still.
Mm-hmm.
But no object.
Yes. Yes.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one last thing, Bhante, that you mentioned, which was very interesting, was the idea that some people who develop samadhi, if they have like a very like strong and powerful mind at that time,
mm-hmm.
but then some lustful or hateful thoughts arise,
mm.
then those can actually overwhelm them because
Correct.
The strength of mind is even more powerful.
Correct.
It reminds me of like certain aspects of the training that the Buddha talked about, which were like... really getting good at sense restraint and also purity in all three, kaya, vacha, and mano kamma.
Correct.
Before like having stable samadhi, because then I suppose you've already trained the mind to be without the hateful and lustful thoughts. Because I have heard of many times that people that develop these very powerful samadhis because they just meditate all the time. Then something happens and then they just lose everything.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah. Because that's the disadvantage or the drawback of concentration, because you are not yet having enough support coming from wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Because you haven't investigated two phenomena, you don't know the situation of the, say, phenomena. So that amount of strength which is required coming from investigation, vipassana is not available right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you simply have the concentrated mind, concentration only, which has certain drawbacks.
Yes.
So concentration helps to sort of multiply a particular experience.
Mm-hmm.
Say if there's a little feeling available, when you are focusing your concentrated mind onto that particular feeling, you are able to magnify it.
Yes.
And feel it. Then that's an advantage for vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
But this, if it is happening to the lustful thought,
mm-hmm.
lustful thoughts also get magnified.
Yes.
Ill will thought also get magnified if you are not properly handling it. And you feel overwhelmed by lust, overwhelmed by ill will, then you get into shout or, I mean, fight or,
mm-hmm.
say, I mean, disturbing or whatever
mm-hmm.
things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because again and again, it may repeat it in your mind.
Yes.
So another aspect of samatha meditation is you are repeating your mind, applying your mind repeatedly onto the same phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Say, when it is happening in unfavorable manner, you see, assume that you are a very good samatha practitioner, you are dwelling in a, say, forest many years,
mm-hmm.
and now you are coming out of that and you are going on a village road and you see a beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very beautiful sight after a long time, and it quickly grasps the mind, and that image now registers in your mind.
Yes.
You strongly grasp it. And repeatedly, again and again, mind get applied to that.
Mm-hmm.
What you practice in Anapanasati or another thing, now you are doing to the same object.
Yes.
So, I mean, the vicious kind of an object.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are being overwhelmed by lust.
Yes.
So that's the drawback in, say, samatha meditation. So, as you mentioned, you have to have a very good sense restraint and maintaining a very good morality. So you are not going into those kind of situations. You are carefully doing it,
mm-hmm.
and you are doing some kind of good association. So likewise, all these protective mechanisms you are maintaining,
mm-hmm.
then you are fairly safe.
Mm-hmm.
Till you have some understanding about, say, vipassana, there probably you have another skill. Even though the sight is beautiful, mind does not want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mind even has seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But does not want to go and grasp it.
Yes.
So that is the support coming from vipassana.
Yes.
So till we have that, very much like we are unsafe.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to invite Kumu Dini to ask a question.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Bhante. Your description about the Samatha jhanas was very interesting, because these steps have, I have experienced them, but I didn't really know what they were. That's why one time I asked you, do you think I have achieved jhana? I didn't really know. Let me go back and say what happened to me when I used to practice Goenka meditation, you know, sensations. This Udaya Bay, you know, rising and passing was happening in my body very rapidly, and I was looking at it as an outsider, and it was just going on and on and on and on. I was not doing anything for it to happen, but it was going on. So this was that stage. It was very strange. And then
I can't hear you. I don't know why.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Do you want me to start from the
beginning? The last part, can you repeat?
This bare-based was happening rapidly, very rapidly, like an electric current through my body, and I was not doing anything to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like an outside observer, seeing it all, you know, watching it all going on. Then a couple of evenings later, the Goenkaji's Dhamma servant, he said that an important stage is going to arise when all of a sudden you would see like a bucket of water being thrown on your body. And, you know, I didn't know what it meant. So we all listened to it. I listened to it, didn't know what it was. But 3 or 4 days later, all of a sudden, when this thing happening to me, all of a sudden it went in, boom, went down, like crashing down, everything stopped, and I got startled and I was afraid. I didn't know what happened. I was thinking maybe
but that he said was an important stage, and I really experienced it as he had described.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why. I mean, at the beginning only you need to train yourself doing it, and after a while, after a fair amount of practice, now mind itself start doing it. Then you don't need to purposely, effortfully do it, but the mind is doing it for you. So then the then the vipassana knowledges are possible, because you are doing it in a more relaxed, more comfortable manner, and then the understanding may start growing.
Yeah, so I think I have experienced these jhanas.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you have described them today.
Yeah, good, good.
And for several days afterwards, I was like, it was an experience that I have never had before in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be like a jhana.
Yeah, definitely. That's why, I mean.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's why Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw and Sayadaw U Pandita, so they clearly have mentioned, there's a very interesting book by Sayadaw U Pandita called In This Very Life. So there he explained each and every these vipassana jhana. And as you said, I mean, these are, one can experience. They are not simply arguments. They are really practical experiences.
So I think I have that book. I will start reading that. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do I do after this?
No, actually, that's why. So now, actually, you need to reach the fourth one. In the fourth one, there are no phenomena. Now, say, the phenomena observing phenomena actually belongs to first, second, third. And the fourth level, the maximum level, is where you completely disassociate, completely abandon, let go of all phenomena and simply enjoy the freedom of mind. So it has let go of all, everything, and simply dwelling in emptiness.
Bhante, that experience I had of this, you know, everything collapsing, and I felt that, so even I was not there.
Yeah, you are not there.
I mean, you know, I sense it. I know it is in theory that I am not there.
Yeah.
But I actually felt it.
Mm.
So do you think it is Bhante Jnana that I felt?
Whatever it is, I mean, you simply have to go through it, and when it is, say, mature, basically it completely let go of everything, and ultimately your mind become more free, not associating anything. Mm-hmm. So that is the direction you need to move.
Okay.
So non-grasping state, non-grasping state where Buddha highlights again and again. So that is the direction that we need to move towards, and try to live in that part, in that experience. Anissitocha viharati. Viharati means you are dwelling in that experience. Not just, say, just 1 minute, 2 minutes, but say several hours, several days, like as much as possible. Now you are familiarizing yourself, being there.
So in your daily activities also?
If possible, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So now those are the interesting areas that we can investigate. Now at the beginning, that experience may be momentary. You cannot, I mean, the mind get only be freed, say, a couple of minutes. But later with practice, now you can enhance it. Maybe 10 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. And even in the walking session, you can come to that state. So likewise, you are now further and further enhancing, increasing that. And later, probably while simply walking, your mind is empty. While you are talking, your even mind is empty. Now say, you are driving, probably your mind is empty.
Technically, can your mind be empty when you are driving a car? Don't you have to be concentrating on?
Yeah, concentrate.
The part?
Now that is the interesting part. So can't you be aware of things while keeping the mind empty?
Yes.
That's what I'm telling. So you
but
are
doing it. But can you actually say that it is emptiness?
No, thing
but
is
you
this.
Have to,
no. Now
you
think.
Have to be able to turn the car wheel or whatever.
Yeah.
Stop, wait.
But you don't need to grasp. Now that's why seeing is just seeing, hearing is just hearing, sensing is just sensing, and cognizing is just cognizing. You are limiting that only to that activity. You are not interested in grasping that. You are not interested in making a self out of that. So the emptiness basically means there is no person, there is no being, there is no self to experience, but experience is going on.
Thank you, Bhante, because sometimes you can ride all the way home without even knowing that you have driven all the way home.
That may be another, so probably, I mean, you can be in a fantasy and then you can continue your traveling.
No.
I mean, that is, so that is not we are talking here.
Okay, but just an empty mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I could be an empty mind too, right?
Sorry?
Could it not be an empty mind too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is a typical thing, no? So we are thinking this and thinking that and... we are in the past, future, and then we came home while driving. So that is typically what happened. But how about you are driving while keeping the mind very quiet? Without any inner chatter.
Yeah.
Without any inner chatter. I mean, these are difficult. We don't need to, I mean, have a kind of perfect situation. I'm just simply promoting it.
In general, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't mean that we should never think. So thinking is possible. Thinking is a useful tool. We are using it purposefully for a purpose, for a when it is required. Otherwise, Buddha's advice is try to dwell in the what you call this ariyo tunhi bhavo. That means noble silence. Noble silence does not merely mean that you keep your mouth shut. How about you keeping your mind also quiet, free from inner chatter, free from any proliferation? So those are the interesting areas actually we can further enhance, because at the beginning it is true that we are keeping our mouth shut, we are silent externally, we are not talking. But internally we are still talking, still arguments are going on, debates are going on, things are going on. But later it becomes less and less inner chatter. Ultimately you can come to a kind of a silence. So you are now enjoying the inner silence.
I can say that there has been a dramatic change in my personality since all this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Much calmer and all that. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I was a very excitable person, but it has changed much more.
Right.
Thank you, Bhante. It was very, very beneficial for me.
Okay, okay. Teruvan Sannai. Yeah, there's another question coming from this side. Yeah.
So I know that sometimes people, you know, when they're practicing meditation, they'll get to like a really concentrated and peaceful state, and then like, I guess their mind is like empty or something, and they go and they get like really frightened by it, and they kind of like go whoa, and they like kind of you know wake up and or you know get out of it, and I just, you know, kind of wanted to know, like, if you knew, like, kind of what's going on there. Like, because, you know, the mind, I think it's perhaps, you know, maybe not used to that calm or peacefulness because it's so used to just wandering around all the time.
Yeah.
And perhaps, like, how could somebody, if they had a state like that and they're, like, getting a little frightened by it, like, what could they do to kind of maintain their calm?
Yeah. So that is where, I mean, you need to again and again practice. So, and you can discuss with another person, with a teacher, and then you feel confident that I have gone through a particular experience, but nothing went wrong. Basically, I didn't feel myself as a person. Now, typically, we appear like a person. We manifest as a person, but through vipassana, that the personality fades away. And sometimes, if you are not really with some understanding, you feel afraid, you feel frightened. What has happened to me? Where am I? What's going to happen to me? So likewise, eye-based threatening or eye-based fright, eye-based fearfulness can happen. But there is a considerable amount of support can be taken through the teaching. You know, what you're understanding is that things are happening due to causes and conditions. It is not there is a solid person. I remains here because of ignorance. We are making an I. So likewise, you are trying to convince yourself slowly. Okay, don't worry. I mean, this is a kind of a personality view I have right now. So it is being challenged during the meditation. What is available is simply a kind of a rising and passing away, simply causes and conditions. So don't worry. Just prepare yourself. Just try another time. Go through it, go prepared. So likewise, you are composing yourself, you are convincing yourself based on the teaching, and again you are going through that experience. Next time also you experience little frightened, but not like previous time. You get little jerk, little frightened. Another time, a little frightened. Another time, another little frightened. So likewise, that frightening or that fearful state become less and less. Ultimately, you are there, no frightening. So, because as you said, I mean, certain things are a little fearful because you are maintaining kind of a strong ego.
Mm-hmm.
So that ego being threatened during the process, then you feel frightened. What has happened to me? You don't feel yourself. You then quickly open your eyes and just check your body, is everything fine? Your hands are available, so likewise. Mm-hmm. But later you are getting familiarized with that state, then you don't worry. I mean, you simply let go. That letting go become quite natural as you are further and further understanding develops. So you understand, okay, things are rising and passing away. There is no core here. There is no person here. I have prepared a person based on my ignorance. Mm-hmm. So likewise, you have some support coming from the teaching.
Yeah, right.
So you are using that understanding to go prepared.
Yeah.
Okay, next time when you are going through it, okay, don't get afraid. So it's a kind of a delusion. It's a kind of an illusion. So just go through it. Likewise, you are convincing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly like that, you have to cross that state.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I would like to invite Smita to the next question.
Bhante, I was thinking of Punyakra's not getting distracted by the highs and lows in life, and like the Tadabhinayanavati, Navipadati, Nachosaya Tirpati. And I was just thinking that when I was a child, I used to get earth, water, and then you mix it and make dolls and, you know, types of foods and flowers. So likewise, I was thinking of Patavya Potato Vayo. Isn't that what I'm doing? I'm making make-believe things out of Patavya Potato Vayo, making different types of forms. And even the Vedana through Patavyapu and all that, the entire Rupa Vedana Sanyana Sankara Vinyana. And then I was thinking, when Buddha said Na Patavi Na Tejo Na Te Vayo, etc., it would then only be an Arahat who would be able to not feel that Patavyapu. Or is it that they feel it, but they don't make dolls and flowers and plants out of the Patavyapu Tejo Vayo? Is that why it's just seeing, just hearing, smelling, touching, you know, the tactile and the thinking? I'm just wondering, is it that there actually is no Patavyapu Tejo Vayo? Is that also make believe? Or is it that there is Patavyapu Tejo Vayo, but the arahats don't make any mental fabrications with all that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we can, yeah, yeah. So, basically, so thinking that things are available for definite terms is one extreme. Things are not available, not at all, things are available is another extreme. Attitancheva natitancha. So, Buddha talks this about this in the Kacchanagotta Sutta. Thinking that everything exists is one extreme. Thinking that nothing exists is another extreme. So, what one understands through vipassana is that things are happening due to causes and conditions. As a result of that, things are arising. On the other hand, when causes and conditions are not present, they start passing away, and then the passing away is there. So, it's very much like we can say that what is available is kind of a very momentary experience. Arising and passing away. Things are constantly arising and passing away. It's a kind of a flux, constant flux. And on the other hand, when one sees such thing, so then mind does not want to grasp it. So as you said, so it is not that things are, we can say in mundane terms, we can say that things are available, but Arahant does not want to grasp it. So ditte ditta matan bhavissati. Say there are things one can see, and you may even see things, but your mind not getting distracted to them. You remain calm, remain quiet, remain unattached, remain uninvolved, remain unentangled. Similarly, say you are hearing things, but you are not purposely go and hear and, you know, listening to that and get involved in that. So that purposeful, distracted observation is not there. Grasping is not there. Rather, you simply hear it. Hearing is just hearing. You are not making a self out of that. So likewise, in the Arahant's experience, in that sense, I mean, I am imagining, I am according to the, because I am not an Arahant. So basically, based on the teaching, we can say, so experiences are there. Sounds are there, smells are there, tastes are there, sights are there, tangibles are there, maybe even thoughts are there. But the mind remains calm, quiet, free, without grasping them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And also, when you were talking to that lady about, you know, driving, you know, thinking, I had an experience long years ago, this age, that made me realize this is a word of make believe in, because I was driving my car, and there was a passenger as well, a young girl who was pregnant with me. And then my mind was very concentrated, but at that time of my life, I used to be very aware of Patriya Putin's fire. And it was where you see, you know, trees and whatever the road, everything. And to me, it was all Patriya Putin's fire. And suddenly, I just vanished. I don't know where I went. There was no me. There was no car. There was nothing. There was no thoughts, nothing. I don't know where I went.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this may, maybe what you call sunyata, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is there was nothing.
Mm.
And then out of the blue, I don't know how long that sort of episode took place. After a while, I thought of my friend and I said, Niluka. And immediately I thought of her, was back in my body, my hands on my wheels, on the wheel, and but I couldn't feel very well. My whole body was like numb.
Mm.
And so much so I told my friend, and I don't feel too well, you may have to drive. And as I started talking to her, I was back, my body was there in whole.
Mm.
So I really, that made me think, if it were a real life that we are living, then there should have been a car accident, because it's an easy road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So don't,
but then,
don't try. Yeah, that's right. Don't try, don't try emptiness while driving.
Yeah, I wasn't trying. It's just that this was like a habit of mine.
That's why, I mean, so. So that's why, I mean, maybe while you are traveling by in a bus, in a train, so where you are not that responsible for things, but you are simply relaxing. On such situation, it's more appropriate just to maintain an emptiness in the mind, because you have nothing to do. Simply wait. Simply wait and continue your travel. So there you can try to maintain the mind empty. So it's a very, very calm, relaxed state of mind. Because there are many things that we can easily get distracted. But if we are trying to keep the mind empty, then get it relaxed.
But then why is it that the mind can do that while I'm driving and all that? But why is it that in my everyday life, I'm still here, I can feel myself, I'm talking to you. It's a like two different worlds.
Exactly. So we are in different worlds, actually. So that is what Buddha very beautifully mentioned in the... Actually, I am not telling that we all are arahants. Rather, we are trying to understand Buddha's teaching. Still, I mean, very much like we are dealing with two worlds. So we are talking in mundane terms, I, you, and we as with various names. So that is necessary for easy communication. But on the other hand, in the more realistic terms, more in the Dhamma terms, we know by these things are merely names. They are merely signs. And what we have is nothing but, we can say, as five aggregates or whatever it is. But there is no individual person, so-called individual, a solid person available here. But it's accumulation of aggregates, accumulation of, say, ayatana. Altogether, we name it as a person. So it's a kind of a conventional name that we are giving. Say, if we consider a vehicle, a car. So there are wheels, there are, say, bonnet and steering wheel and engine, petrol and all these components together, assemble them together, then we give the name a car. It's a name given. But what is available is the accumulation of so much of components. So similarly, everywhere different conventions are there, different names, signs are there. But really, really, what is available in the physical world, we can argue, okay, just the arising and passing away of aggregates, arising and passing away of elements. So, in that world, there is no person, there is no being, there is no animal, there is no I. So, very much, therefore, while you are in the emptiness, you are trying to switch into that mode, switch into that emptiness, switch into that understanding. But when you are talking to another person, you are doing your office work, you are doing your children's work, whatever it is, then again you are back in the conventional terms and you are earning money, you are talking and you are writing a letter and all these things are there. So it's very much like a kind of a dualistic role that one has to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I suppose when you said this, I suppose when Buddha said Rahula Mongkalan Sariputta, he also came down to the conventional world.
Definitely, definitely.
World.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Was there another question in the room, Bande?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there time?
Okay.
So I wonder, Bante, is it something like that sunyata, that different kind of world, the different understanding where there is no self, is that more or less like the sanya that leads to vimutti kind of thing? And so even an arahant can come back to the more mundane kind of perceptions?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that once they've eliminated ignorance and craving completely, then never again will they have these wrong perceptions?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow just their functioning is still working.
Mm.
But like they will never come back to other world.
Mm. So we can argue, we can say
Or is it that they switch?
We can't say that kind of it's a huge switching. Even yesterday we were discussing in the concept and reality in that book, it's very much like Buddha giving a very interesting simile where a water droplet is kept on a lotus leaf. So it is on the water's leaf, but it's not touching. So it is not a huge difference. You know, there is no huge distance between these two. The water droplet is simply on the leaf, but not touching. I'm very close, but there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are theoretically trying to understand, we think, okay, he's switching from this to, he's switching to that. So, it's difficult. But it's very, 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 maybe like ordinary thing for him.
Mm-hmm. Natural.
Quite natural for him. It doesn't need a purposeful switching.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, he can simply dwell in the both worlds harmoniously. When he has to talk to another person, he may be using his name to address. But internally, he knows there is no person.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like something like that. Mm-hmm. Conventionally, he used all the conventional terms. But on the other hand, internally, because of his understanding, there is no grasping.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. When we consider the other people, now say Kapuggala, say trainees, so they may also have some understanding, but time to time the mind get distracted and mind may get grasping.
Mm-hmm.
So the certain defects are still available.
Yes.
Because not the full understanding available.
Mm-hmm.
Still they are growing, they are training themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I would like to invite you to Debbie for the next session.
Thank you, Victor. Now, in this fourth stage, Bante, you said that development of that concentration leads to the destruction of the game, right?
Yes, yes.
So here we come to contemplate the rise and fall of the five aggregates, subject to cleaning. So my question is based on that, when we go into meditation and, especially in the retreat situation where we go into kind of deep states, which is in the Vipassana state, what you described, now this rise and fall of the aggregates, we can see the breath very fine, though it rises and falls. So is that what we call the by the aggregate, but we are not now breaking down to the animant and the solidity and all this kind of thing. We are just watching that breath in terms of the elements, because in any case the breath also has all the elements anyway. So would that be right if I said that something?
Yeah, we can say. Because at the beginning we didn't have that much of an understanding. We simply perceived it as in-breath and out-breath. But later that names...
Yes.
those signs simply drop, and we start perceiving the element characteristics. We recognize the movements, we recognize the warmth, we recognize the, say, coolness, maybe vibrations, touching, and these are very elementary level of perceptions, and that is how it's getting refined.
Yes. So as you get deeper and deeper into this, you just watch this. You said we relax and we are not investigating too much. We're just watching this thing, and you just say this is the rice can falling on the five aggregates, and of course we are not clinging to it at that stage. So at that moment, that particular moment, we are not clinging onto anything. So we have lost the tense momentarily. Would that be right if I said that?
We can say the influence of taints are not there. Influence of taints are not. Yeah.
We
can say so. We can't say that they are completely uprooted, but their influence is.
No.
Their influence being hindered or
what you can say is
basically stopped because of the power of this understanding.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
later when we are more and more familiarized, more and more strengthened with this understanding, so the taints may slowly start fading away, and there may be a situation completely they are uprooted.
Yes, that of course it's a long process, I think, but at that particular time where you're in this, especially in the retreat situation where you develop these deep states, then you're probably out of those things. But then, of course, when you come back to reality, then those things are creep back slowly, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And also the three, and now then he talks about the feelings and the perceptions and the mental formation. So we are looking at all that. Also in the Satipatthana, we are looking at all those things to Bhante. So this
yes.
is a deeper, the more concentrated thing where they are looking at the feelings, because we have earlier looked at it with a lot of detail, the rising and falling and so forth. But now these, as Kundalini mentioned, that it comes like waves and waves. For me, the feeling comes like in waves. So as you said, it's not a one wave, but it is like breaking up a wave. So you can see it coming and going very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are watching that, also you just say that the rise and fall. Would that be right?
Yeah. I mean, there are typically in the books. There
would
are.
That be right, Bhante?
Yeah, in the books typically. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you, Bhante.
Okay, so in the books there are two stages typically mentioned into Udayabhaya, rising and passing away. The Tarunudayabhaya and Balabudayabhaya.
Yes.
Tarunudayabhaya means you are recognizing the rising and passing away as a group, as a one compact unit.
Yes.
But later, as a very subtle phenomena, very intrinsic or rather very minute kind of information is capable of you are seeing, then it's very momentary arising and passing away. So fairly concentrated oriented and again quickly arising and passing away, and as a result of that your understanding may further grow, further enhanced. But as you said, when we are coming to the non-grasping state, all those things are abandoned, so mind recognize another kind of a domain, another kind of a dwelling in emptiness, leaving aside every conditioned phenomena. So it now interested in unassociated kind of dwelling.
Yes, it's just wanting to be, right?
Yeah, just that's all. Simply aware, but not no grasping. So this simple awareness is something available. You don't need to create it. You don't need to form it, you don't need to make it. It's a kind of a birthright. So awareness is there, that's all.
So yeah, so that happens. I mean, you are, for me it happens, but I can, I'm aware of the breath in the background, so I don't know whether that's an early stage of whatever, or whether it is a stage even, I don't know, but I feel very comfortable and I'm just there,
mm-hmm.
but I can, I'm aware that we have to breathe, otherwise we die, no?
Yeah, yeah. So don't worry.
Yeah, the background. You know what I mean.
Yeah. No, actually, breathing may happen. We don't know. We don't need to worry, and we don't need to check whether we are breathing. But we are simply.
Exactly.
Yeah. We are simply assume now. Now we are simply watching the mind. So at that time, we don't need to check whether the breathing happens. So we are simply focusing on mind, trying to recognize what are the thoughts going on, and then we simply allow them to pass by. And now probably there is a complete absence of thoughts. And we are trying to dwell in that as well.
Just, we are just being. Right?
Exactly.
Yes, we are just being.
Yeah.
Yes, and I have read that book once because Lupanguru told me to read that book and I have read it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's another thing. I have some of the questions I have, but she's too short for that.
Okay, but you mean the in this very life, right? In this very life.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
right.
In this very life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. I think we have come to the end of the session. Jennifer, I think you have no questions.
That's correct, Bante.
Okay. So I have another small announcement. Actually, today is 5th, 12th and 19th. I won't be able to conduct the session. So you have 2 weeks vacation. so probably I'll join on 26th. That I'll inform Jennifer before that. In case sometimes 26 also not possible, that I need to check. But I am sure that 12th and 19th I won't be able to conduct the session. So that is a small announcement that I need to make. I'll Jennifer, please inform through a mail that these things are. I mean, on 12th and 19th, there is no this particular sutta teaching session.
Okay.
Yeah.
Noted.
Okay. So now, we have spent a fair amount of time discussing Dhamma, listening to Dhamma. And whatever the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the celestial beings or with all the past devil relatives and with beings who are in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mam parang idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo gamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.